Sandy Annunziata from Yahoo Sports, former offensive lineman. Sandy, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Sandy, I love the fact that Curran didn't give me some bogus answer. But he just said, no, this is why we couldn't stop them. We weren't physical enough. They out, you know, they out-physicaled us. You look at Calgary's O-line, how good are they, and what are the matchups, if we go offensive lineman versus D-line, that we should be most intrigued to watch?
They're a good offensive line. Ultimately, you have a talent in John Cornish, but he's only as good as the big fellas up front. And I think, for a lot of years, the Calgary front five has kind of flown under the radar. But it's good to see guys like Brett Jones get their due. He's up for most outstanding offensive line. But it's a very technically sound offensive line. And that's what makes the challenge, so daunting for the Edmonton Eskimos, is how do you confuse that front five? How do you do things that make Calgary's offensive line have to adjust to you? I think ultimately, if you can get an offense adjusting to what you do defensively, that's half the battle. So I know Chris Jones, he's a very creative defensive coordinator. I'm sure he's going to put some wrinkles in the defensive game plan that's going to confuse the Calgary offensive line just a little bit. But at the end of the day, it's still about gap cancellation. Edmonton has to get into their gaps, have to cancel out A, B's, and C's, and limit the gains of John Cornish through the tackles.
Well, Sandy, it's interesting because, Curran was honest that Calgary line is technically sound as they were. They also threw him around a little bit that last time out. And when you're that Calgary offensive line, you just need that split second with a back the quality of Cornish. So it seems all the advantages, at least on paper going in, are with the Stamps.
Yeah, and at this point, you have to be very disciplined as a linebacker for the Edmonton Eskimos. I think the biggest challenge is going to be the front four, whether it's a 40 front, whether it's a bastardized 30 or a 50 front. I think what you have to do is you have to be able to use up offensive linemen. You have to be able to sacrifice yourself for the good of the team. And defensive linemen, the good ones anyways, do that. They use up one or two offensive linemen, therefore preventing them from climbing up to the next level and getting to the linebackers. So at this point, it's not about glories, padding your stats and making the tackle if you're a defensive lineman for the Edmonton Eskimos. It's about staying low and using up offensive linemen so they can't get to second level. Let the linebackers clear up, and I think that's half the battle right now.
Sandy Annunziata joins us. Sandy, the Eskimos lost Simeon Rotier on the O-line, and they go with the three imports, and they've done a pretty good job. Calgary's D-line, of course, Charleston Hughes, one of the best in the league. That's going to be a matchup right now that definitely favors, when you look up against the Eskimo tackles right now, an advantage for Calgary. How do you slow down Hughes?
Well, at this point, I think it's going to be contingent upon the health of Mike Riley, because ultimately, Charleston Hughes is a great pass rusher. He does a great job of flushing quarterbacks out of the pocket. Now, that's very effective against a very immobile quarterback, a quarterback that tends to stay in the pocket. But once Mike Riley gets outside the tackles, he can make things happen. So it's kind of a controlled pass rush, and that prevents Charleston Hughes and the other defensive ends from really getting upfield in a hurry. But if you're the Edmonton Eskimos, ultimately, how do you slow down that pass rush? How do you give your quarterback time? You either slide the protection, you move the pocket, you run some draws, you run some screens, you perfect your short game, and all these things will make the defensive line stop just for that split second, have to protect against the run, have to protect against the draw or the screen play, and therefore preventing them from getting upfield and in the backfield to the quarterback in a hurry.
Yes, Andy, and the wild card really is Riley. If that D-line of Calgary's knows where Riley is going to be, as in the pocket, because he does not have his usual mobility, that makes for an easier day for them and a real long day for the Edmonton offensive line, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And let's face it, Mike Riley can make a very mediocre offensive line look very good. Ultimately, if you have a very immobile quarterback, tackles control the width of the pocket. Guards and center control the depth of the pocket. You always know where your quarterback is going to be. But in the case of Mike Riley, he's gotten his offensive line out of a lot of trouble because he's able to scramble and make things happen when the protection kind of breaks down. But if he's going to be sitting in the pocket and he's going to adopt that straight drop back passer because he's not as mobile as he should be because of injury. The Calgary Stampeders are going to have a beat on his path and have a much easier day.
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting kind of a back and forth game of this. What do you make of it all? You know, Calgary, you know, their history, their reputation of being guys who can't get it done in the playoffs. When you look at how good they've been regular season-wise over the last decade, and then, you know, the amount of Grey Cup appearances to match that hasn't been close, Andy. Do you buy into that? Does that come into play, you know, if this game is tight in the third or fourth quarter in your mind?
Yeah, I do, because this is a Calgary team that for some reason or another, they always tend to self-implode. They always make ridiculous comments in the media. There's locker room distractions. They focus on everything that they shouldn't be focusing on, and unfortunately, it's led to their inability to win the big games at the most important times. So that's still a culture over there. Now, you've got to give John Huffnagel some credit. Over the past couple of years, he's tried to exercise the demons out of that locker room, and he's tried to maintain a more focused approach to each and every game. But let's face it, the playoffs are a different animal, and you can have the best record during the regular season, but if you're a team that's not mentally strong and lets those outside distractions into the locker room, then again, it's going to prevent you from reaching the ultimate goal, which is a Grey Cup. So I still think there's still something to that in Calgary. When the bullets start to fly and the seconds start to tick off and it's a very, very close game, at this point, I always give the advantage to the underdog, which is the Edmonton Eskimos. But, you know, having said that, it's a very veteran-led team in Calgary, and hopefully they can put it all together when it's the most important time of the season, and that's probably the Western final to get to the Grey Cup.
Sandy, the two main storylines for me, and they're obvious, I think, Riley's health, and the guy who runs the ball for the Stampeders, he's pretty good too. The difference is Riley doesn't have to take a lick on every play. He's going to take some to test that foot. But when you're lugging the pigskin as many times as John Cornish has to be effective, you're getting hit on every play. That could swing things a lot, couldn't it?
Well, yeah, it could. But again, you know, the Achilles heel of the Calgary Stampeders might also be their biggest weapon. And I look at John Cornish. When they're firing on all cylinders and John Cornish gets his touches, he's going to be able to get yards. But again, when you're so preoccupied on one running back, one weapon, that gives the opportunity for a lot of other guys to step up and pick up some yards from guys that you wouldn't normally expect it. So I wouldn't be surprised if they limit the carries of John Cornish, but they throw some wrinkles into the offensive game plan to allow some of the other guys to step up and make plays, because it's a bit of a change-up. And, you know, to use a baseball analogy, if you're expecting fastballs all game long and a pitcher comes in there with a change-up, unfortunately, it throws off your timing and throws off some of the things you do on the defensive side of the ball. So, again, that's the big question mark right now, is if you let John Cornish carry the whole load, given his history of concussions, and try to limit his exposure, or do they open up the game plan, give some of those other guys a bit of a chance to kind of carry the ball and pick up some important yards?
Sandy Annunziata joins us breaking down the Eskimos and the Stampeders. John White, everybody talks so much about John Cornish. John White had 64% of the Eskimos offense last week. He is clearly right now their go-to guy, either rushing the ball or receiving. Would you look at, you know, there's so much put on John Cornish, and I understand why, but I crunched all the numbers for John White, and his production throughout the year was just below. He averaged 7.3 yards a touch, and Cornish was 7.7. It's not that big of a difference. Is White the guy that's really, you know, not getting as much fanfare as he should be right now?
Well, it's kind of a two-headed monster in the Eskimo backfield, especially with a healthy Mike Riley. Let's face it, Mike Riley a year ago led the Eskimos in rushing, and he was almost himself a 1,000-yard rusher. So it's kind of this two-headed monster. But again, I think it speaks to the development of the offensive line and finally, you know, harnessing some of the challenges that they had up front. I love the way he runs the ball, and he's powerful enough to get through the tackles, but then he's quick enough to make a quick cut here or there and pick up some extra yards. And on top of that, He's great in the protection schemes, and he can catch the ball out of the backfield. So at this point of the season, you know, he's one of those all-purpose threats, and I would try to put the ball in his hands as often as possible, whether it's through the screen game, whether it's through swing passes, whether it's through draw plays, or whether it's just straight handoff in the backfield and letting him, you know, pick his way through the offensive line. He's just that good of a player. So, again, it's going to come down to some of your more talented players. But, again, the big question mark is what offense is able enough to incorporate them and get them free in space. And, again, that's some game planning. And both those coaches are going to go through the film, and they're going to try to outsmart and outthink the opposition. And that's the chess match within the chess match.
Sandy, I know you were on the offensive side of the ball, but as a player, to me it was obvious last week that Riley had next to no mobility. He came in, you know, after Nichols. How apparent is it to a player down on the field when this guy, he might be out there and he's still Mike Riley, let's not take anything for granted, but he's not right?
Yeah, and let's face it, he's a very average quarterback if he loses his mobility. The great thing about Mike Riley is his ability to throw the ball down the field and make those completions when the play looks pretty much over. And what he does is he buys himself some time. And the longer a quarterback can buy himself some time, that means his receivers can get separation from the defensive secondary. And that's why a lot of times those players look so wide open. Sometimes the best plays are the ones that you drop in the sand lot, in the sand. And that's what Mike Riley is so effective at. Mm-hmm. But if he loses that element in his game, then unfortunately he just becomes a normal quarterback. And, you know, the protection is that much tighter. And he has to be that much more of an accurate thrower to fit the ball into his receivers when they don't get that separation. So that's the challenge on Mike Riley right now. Can he reinvent himself without the mobility? Can he reinvent himself and the way he plays the game by losing a step because of his mobility issues? That's the question mark right now.
Sandy, quickly moving out east, Hamilton, Montreal. Montreal crushing BC in that east semifinal. You know, they just met a few weeks ago, and I know Montreal was very vocal afterwards saying we're going to win the game when it matters most in the final. Hamilton's been very good at home in that new building. Who do you like in this game and why?
Well, it all depends on what Montreal Alouette team shows up. If the one from 2 weeks ago that played Hamilton in the last game of the regular season shows up, then I got to give the nod to Hamilton. Certainly, they got momentum on their side. Zach Collaros has been, you know, very competent in the pocket. His receivers are really coming into their own. And on top of that, they finally get Andy Fantuz back, who now is more of a threat in the receiving core. They lost him for the past three or four games. So again, they're getting healthier. On the Montreal side of the ball, I guess it all depends on if you can score points. They weren't able to do it the first time against Hamilton 2 weeks ago, but they put up a whole lot against a struggling BC team. I'm going to suspect that this game is going to come down to who limits the mistakes and who limits the penalties, like most of the time it does. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring affair, but I certainly think the team that secures the ball and picks up first yardage and, you know, moves the ball methodically up and down the field, I think that's the team that's going to have the best success. And from my estimation, a team like Hamilton and their offensive scheme is built to move the sticks, you know, sustain drives, keep the opposition off the field offensively, and just eat up a time clock. I like the way Hamilton plays, and you got to give credit to Ken Austin and his staff to do that.
Sandy, should be a great weekend, man. See you at the Grey Cup.
Sounds good, buddy.